Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Digital Marketing Agency Builders Podcast. In this show, we discuss the rapidly advancing digital marketing industry and how to grow a profitable marketing agency with some of the best minds in the space. Since 2015, Tyler Narducci has been building and scaling his own digital agency, helping businesses grow and market their services and products through online advertising. Now, he's helping other startup digital agencies launch and scale rapidly to six figures with the Done For You Agency Program. If you're interested in taking your agency to the next level and skip all those painful mistakes most have to make by learning directly from those killing it in the digital agency space, then apply now at dfyagencyprogram.com/scale. That's dfyagencyprogram.com/scale. There will be a clickable link in the podcast show notes below. Now, let's dive into today's episode.
All right, everybody, welcome to the next episode of the Digital Marketing Agency Builders Podcast. Today, I have with me John Horn. John is the CEO of Stub Group, a digital advertising agency and premier Google Ads partner, ranked by Google in the top 1% of all Google Ad partners worldwide, or all Google partners worldwide, for performance and customer care. John has also taught digital advertising classes to more than 90,000 students and lives and breathes PPC. John's agency Stub Group manages the online marketing for a wide variety of companies in the e-commerce, lead gen, B2B, B2C, and local service industries. John now spends much of his time and energy equipping his team to provide best-in-class service to his clients and speaking on digital advertising and marketing. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Tyler, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, super excited. So let's just dive right in. I love hearing how people ended up in our space. How did you originally end up in the digital agency space?
Yeah, great question. So that really goes back to the origin story of Stub Group as a company. Back in the day, close to a decade now at this point, we were started by our two founders who both came out of the digital advertising agency kind of world. And they saw that pay-per-click specifically as a medium or form of advertising was something that was just exploding in popularity and growth. Obviously, there was already a massive amount of it going on by that point, but there was also very much a need in the marketplace for agencies, marketers to help advertisers who are making that transition from traditional to digital and figuring out how to navigate those waters. And so they started Stub Group back in the day, really bootstrapped things from there. I came on board with them as the first employee back in the day. And since then, it's been a journey of growing and learning and building alongside of our clients.
That's awesome. What year did you come on board with Stub Group?
I believe 2014, I want to say, is when I started.
Very cool. Very cool. 2014 is when I like initially cracked my LLC. Yep. In 2015 really was like getting those first clients and, you know, generating everything. So we have a very similar like start time. I think there was so much, just like energy and momentum in the market at that point. It was really, yeah, really cool. What's your favorite thing about the agency business model, having been in it now for 6-8 years? What would you say your favorite thing is about the whole business model itself?
I would say getting to work with such disparate types of businesses and getting to see so many different types of business models on behalf of our clients. So every day it's like, oh, you can make money doing that. I had no clue you could do that, but cool. We're going to figure out how to market for that. And just seeing how many different businesses, you know, run their operations. We get to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And really it's an MBA every day with real life case studies of what works well and what does not.
That's a phenomenal answer. I actually never really thought about that, but we do, like in the agency space, we just get a constant crash course in so many different business models and everything, assuming that a lot of people that I work with, they work in one niche, but they're also, you know, agencies like myself, we started unniched and work with different business models. And so we get, you know, constantly like all the good and bad of other businesses, which is really cool. Whereas if you had almost any other business, you're just steeped in that every day. So it is really cool. Okay. Cash flow. This is a really good topic I do want to talk to you about as well, because in the agency space, I mean, when you're doing it right, there can be a ton of cash coming in and things could look totally green, but You know, as you get further, you know, down the line, expenses definitely creep up, everything from software costs to ad spend for your own agency. If you're getting leads through ads, you know, there's also contractors, employees. Some of us have offices. I don't, but that's, you know, a lot of people do. So what, in your opinion, are some ways that digital agencies in 2022 can really keep positive cash flow coming in every month?
Yeah, that's a great question. What we have done for many years to really help with that cash flow side of things is we charge our clients upfront. So at the beginning of each month, we charge our clients for what we're going to be, you know, doing on the work side of things for them that month. And sometimes it'll be, have to be a little bit of a reconcile at the end of the month, just figuring out, do they spend more or less than expected? Do we need to credit? Do we need to charge more? That kind of thing. So there's a little more accounting work involved, but I can't tell you how helpful that is. I mean, you know, obviously being in the agency space, that knowing going into each month, okay, I've got the money for my clients. I can pay my team members. I can pay the expenses that are coming up this month. That is, you know, that is vital. And some clients don't want to take that approach. And, you know, for those clients who say, hey, sorry, we're not going to be the best fit for you. But I'd say that rarely happens where we have a client would say, no, we're not going to work with you because you charge up front. Because again, if you're really good at what you do, which is, you know, what we are, you can kind of, to some extent, set the parameters of that engagement and say, hey, here's how we operate, you know, take it or leave it. And we find that the majority of clients are on board with that approach.
100%. And I think the clients that would say no in that engagement are not clients you would have wanted in the first place. They're often clients that have the most trust issues. They've, you know, gone through like, you know, like their agency burners, like red flag. They've been through 7 agencies already this year, kind of situation. And they're just looking for, you know, a race to the bottom, whether it's on pricing or, you know, pricing structures that they're getting and everything. And those never turn out to be the best clients.
100%. Yeah. Those are the clients that you then end up trying to chase for those fees. If you've given them net 30 or net 60 or whatever terms, and, you know, 6 months down the road, maybe hopefully you get some money, but by that point you're already in cash flow prison.
Yeah. I think the net 30, net 60 stuff, to me, it seems like a relic of a pastime almost. Like I've never, even when I just started out like 2014, 2015, I was never, work first, getting paid later, because I just, you know, in this business, like the service, you're doing the work. Like I don't think there should ever really be a situation where agency like is like an IOU, unless they're in like an actual performance-based contract where, you know, there's established trust, there's already results being delivered. Like there's, you know, a healthy marketing engine involved that's producing the results right from day one, or, you know, you were building up to that point in your contract. Maybe you've been on retainer for a while and then you move, you know, a trusted client into a performance base, like a percentage of ad spend or percentage of revenue. But at that stage in the client agency relationship, like there's already that trust built, right? Not like from a day one kind of thing and like, okay, we'll go set everything up for free and then, you know, charge you after, because that's not happening.
Not a good recipe for success.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. I get this question quite a bit in my Done For Agency program from newer agency owners. And I would love to hear your thoughts on it. I have pretty firm thoughts on this, but I'm interested to hear your side. Would you advise the agencies front the ad spend for your clients?
I would not advise that. No, it's definitely a question we often get from our clients, often particularly, you know, the larger clients where they're saying, hey, we're spending a lot of money with you. You know, we just want to send the money to you, you know, at the end of the month or 2 weeks after or whatever. And there's just so much risk that comes from that. Not even necessarily from a trust side of things. I mean, you can have a ton of trust in the client and say, hey, I know they're going to be good for it. But there's just things that happen that you can't prepare for. I mean, look at 2020. If you were front ad spend for a business and suddenly that business, you know, could no longer operate and they're saying, okay, we have to freeze all expenses, that kind of thing. And you're left holding that bag. That's the type of thing that just takes agencies down, and not the risk I want to put my, you know, my team members into.
No way. Especially with like a client that's spending a ton, right? Like if you're spending thousands of days or thousands of dollars per day on ads, like just one day where they are not paying you back in any way, like it just, a nightmare scenario. And beyond that, like there are so many other, you said there's many risks. Like the first and foremost risk that you think about is the agency not paying you back and being left holding the bag. The business not paying the agency back and you left holding the bag. But there are also like a ton of other risks. For example, Facebook ads, like they're just love them because they work, but they're also so problematic. Like they'll blacklist a credit card if an ad account gets shut down. And if your agency is using your agency credit card on all your client accounts and one account goes down, then all of your other accounts could go down that are also tied to that credit card because it's now blacklisted on Facebook. And then all of your clients are now looking at you going, what the heck? Why isn't this working? Why aren't you spending on my account? Right. And then you're trying to explain to them some weird credit card problem that you have. It's just a complete nightmare. Like across the board, there's honestly, I can't think of one good thing that would come of that. Like it just makes so much more sense to, have the actual business put their own card on it. Also, Facebook like is known to overcharge every now and then. And you have to like, in my opinion, you really have to prepare your clients for that because like setting the right expectations for them. Another thing that my clients have, freaked out about without, proper expectation setting is how ad accounts will charge the card in the very early days, right? When they're trying to gain trust on the card. And so they put like $5, $10, $10. And they just see so many charges hitting their card and they're like, what's happening? Is this some type of fraud? Right. But it's really just like the engines learning how to do that. So while I totally agree, like we have to use our clients' business cards on their accounts, I think it's also really important that we set that expectation with the client of like how this is going to work, what to expect on your card, what could go wrong. We may possibly need another virtual card down the line. All of those things I think are really important.
Absolutely.
All right. So when, what are some considerations rather when it comes to choosing a pricing structure that you will charge your clients? Because we just talked about, performance-based and retainer-based and everything. So how do you, when you're dealing with, new leads all the time and you especially dealing in like e-commerce and lead gen across the whole board, how do you, streamline your pricing structures and then deliver that to your prospects?
Yeah. So I would say that there are kind of maybe three main categories. If you want to look at on the pricing side of thing, you've got, straight up hourly for your work, you've got kind of retainer, and then you've got kind of performance based. And what we do is kind of a combination of retainer and then sometimes performance based. But when I say performance based, I'm specifically talking about percentage of ad spend, not, based upon cost per lead or revenue, that kind of thing. And the reason we've steered away from that more performance based side of things is that there's just so many variables that we cannot control. If you're saying, okay, cost per lead, we'll take X out of the cost per lead, or if we drive this revenue, we'll take this amount. And ultimately you're relying upon the client to report that information to you and to report it accurately. Yeah. And even if you have a lot of trust for the client and you're not concerned about them, trying to dip you out of money, that whole accurate side of things really plays a role where, hey, I mean, there's all kinds of things that can happen that can mess up the accuracy of tracking, or they could say, oh, hey, we think this came from over here, not from you guys. And you're like, oh, well, no, we contributed to that. It's just
in a post iOS 14 world.
Exactly. Yeah. So the approach that we have found to be best over the years is a retainer. So we're making at least a set monthly fee per month. And then for many of our clients, depending on their budget, we'll also be charging a percentage of ad spend with the, the general idea that the more we're spending for them, the more work we're having to put into things because there's more data to be collected and optimized upon, et cetera. And the more value we're generating to them because we're only going to be spending more money if that's actually turning into revenue and profit for them.
Now, you're saying that you would start at a retainer base and then as they spend more, then you consider a percentage of ad spend, or is it regardless always going to be a retainer and a percentage of ad spend, no matter how little or much you're spending? Like, does the amount that they're spending change the percentage that you're then taking from the ad spend?
Yeah. So typically we work with a very wide range of clients in terms of size. So we'll have kind of plans at the lower end where it'll just be retainer. You know, if a client spending, let's say $2,000, $3,000 a month, usually something like that, it'll typically just be, hey, here's our fee, you know, each month that we charge our retainer. As the ad spend budgets increase, we'll often say, okay, here's our fee. And then it'll be, you know, 10% of ad spend, sometimes either or, sometimes in addition to. And so as they scale, we know we're for sure going to get, you know, X base fee, but then as their budget scales and the work involved in our part in that advertising scales, we, you know, our fees scale along with that as a percentage.
Yeah. I think also like as agencies, like it's really important in our own prospecting that we're able to identify leads that can really grow with us. Cause like our end game is always, we want to scale you and also grow our relationship with you. Right. Like we don't want to just be like at a 2K retainer per month forever. Like that, that's a relationship that really doesn't grow. I mean, yes, it's stable income, which is great. But ultimately like, you know, a lot of, you know, our contracts are maybe start as retainer, but then move into a performance-based structure where we're able to be compensated for the additional ad spend, like you're talking about, as we go down the line. How do you, or what are some things that you look for within your leads to identify those that you really can get excited about, that they say, hey, this is a, you know, a business that we can definitely grow with? And then how do you really convey that over to the lead that look like we're really confident in this?
Yeah, well, I'd say number of signals that we're looking at. Certainly market size, you know, what is their market potential? If we're talking to, let's say a local plumber, that's a great business. We're going to help them, support them, but you know, they're going to have a limited market size based upon their local area. If we're talking to a national e-commerce brand, obviously it's going to be a very different conversation, market size potential, et cetera. So look at market size. You want to look at just how are they operating as a business? Do they have a good reputation online? Are they investing time and energy themselves into their website, into their social media presence? Or are they one of those companies that basically just says, oh, we don't have to do any work, we'll hire you, you know, you do all the work.
Yeah,
well, right. No. We're an important part of things, but if you're not, you know, working on your business and growing it hand in hand with us, then you're not going to, you know, you're not going to see the results that you're looking for. So really understanding how invested is the business into themselves, and are they running things well, and do they have processes in place? And a lot of things can be learned during our initial sales conversations with leads, as we're asking them things like, hey, how do you define success? You know, what are the numbers that you're trying to hit? And if a business doesn't know those answers, it could still be a great business, and often we'll come alongside of them and help them figure out those numbers. But that's certainly a signal to tell us kind of where they are in the stage of their journey, even as a business, which helps us understand how we can best help them and help them grow. And, you know, again, like you said, what that scaling opportunity looks like.
Yeah, I totally agree. Everything you just said. I think one thing that was like, so like head on the, or nail head on the nail. What is that term I'm looking for? I think the one thing you said that was like, you hit the nail on the head. That's what it was asking them what their idea of success is, right? Because that, if you skip, that question is so critical. I think if you skip that question, you can literally start a client agency relationship and have two completely different visions of what we're supposed to be doing here, right? Like there are leads out there that, like, I actually just had someone, we do LinkedIn outreach, we do Facebook, we do a ton of different outreach things, right? Mm-hmm. And we have like a parent company brand on Facebook. We have also my personal Facebook page. And we really put, I mean, there's content on both, but we would have put a lot of the effort into my personal brand one, which then feeds into the agency a lot. And I think someone saw our parent company brand Facebook, and they told us when we reached out to them in Instagram that they booked a call and they're looking forward to it, but they have some deep concerns about our social media presence and our Facebook page. And I'm like racking my brain. I'm like, what the heck? What can they kind of concerns? Like, we have like posts going out regularly. We have a Facebook group of, you know, over 14,000 people. We have like podcasts going, we have clipped content going, we have blog articles coming out every week. We have like so much going. And I'm like, what could they possibly be concerned about? They were concerned because they looked at our likes and they thought we should have had like tens of thousands of likes on the page. And because we didn't have that many likes, they personally equated that to, well, they must not be, you know, a real good company, or they must not be like having success in their own. Right. And I'm like, that just baffles me. Right. Because like, as an agency owner, like knowing, like we're a multi seven figure agency ourselves. And then we've also worked with so many other like multi seven figure businesses. Right. And like, we know at this stage, like that's almost irrelevant. Right. So like all the actual conversion activity that's happening on the other end. But I think it's so often that we forget that a lot of our prospects just have a completely different idea of what they think success should look like. And so unless you get really the clarity on that of like, where are we at here? Are we want sales, right? We like, you oftentimes find people that like their initial thought was, I wanted a bunch of likes. Like I wanted to be popular on social media. And yeah. Oftentimes we have to be like, that's great. And we can get you that very easily. I mean, really easily. But that's not sales. Right. And like there, I hear many, many times, like, I'm getting a lot of likes and I'm getting a lot of engagement online, but I'm having a really hard time converting that into sales. Mm-hmm. And it's just like that it was never supposed to really convert to sales. Right. Engagement is engagement and conversions are conversions. And I think engagement is a great like authority builder for the people who you went after as a conversion. When they look over and they say, oh, okay, they're credible. And then they go and convert. But like the conversion activity itself was never to like get someone to like my page and then convince them to buy the product. It almost like, it's like the back road around.
Yeah. Now we'll often find, I think education is a really crucial part of that agency client relationship. And, you know, I get it. Businesses, they're busy running a business. And often when they're thinking about, let's say, advertising or marketing in particular, they're operating sometimes a couple of years behind in, oh yeah, you know, Facebook likes, that used to be the thing that everybody said, yeah, go get that. And that's going to make your business grow. And they read that article or saw that and said, hey, that's where we need to be.
Yeah.
But that's why, as you know, as an expert on the agency side, we have a position to be able to say, well, actually, no, let's look at, you know, again, success, money in the door, what's going to make you money, and what are the ways that we can help you accomplish that. And if getting Facebook likes as a credibility signal, like you said, to help with the leads you're already speaking with, it's going to be helpful, then let's do it. But yeah, a like does not put food on the table.
No, never has. Another one, and I'm guarantee that you've seen this in the PPC world, when you like bring on a lead paid ads and you ask them, you know, have you been running traffic before? Have you ever done paid ads? They said, oh yeah, I've been doing paid ads for a long time. And you ask them like, okay, well, what kind of results have you been getting and everything? And they get really watery and they're not really sure on the answer. And they say, I'll have to look into it. And they give you access, right? And you look under the hood and you find out they've been boosting posts for like the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. And they had no idea that like that wasn't a conversion campaign. Like they don't know the difference between a like campaign, a boosted post, and a conversion campaign. They just know they've been running Facebook ads because Facebook is a really great marketer at that boost button and making it really tempting to businesses to get eyeballs on your business, while very much so like hiding the fact that that doesn't convert into sales. Like, and it never has. It like the people that it sends those things to are people who like things, not buy things. Yeah. But that's part, like you said, that's part of the education process that goes along with, you know, the agency client relationship. I love this question. What are some common misconceptions about marketing agencies?
Yeah, I'd say one common misconception is that agencies are really good at all the different things that they say that they're good at. Let me put that bluntly. And that's, you know, one of the dangers of the agency world is we like to be yes men. We like to say, yes, we'll take care of that for you and figure it out. And to some extent, you've got to do that because, hey, the world is constantly changing, platforms constantly change. You've got to figure things out for clients and they're paying you to figure it out. At the same time, if you're working with an agency that says they're the best at SEO, the best at PPC, the best at website design, the best at social media, it's really hard to be the best at everything. And it's more likely that they're really good at maybe SEO. They started SEO and then they added on PPC as a service or something like that. And so I would always encourage clients when they're analyzing an agency they would work with is, okay, figure out what actually are their core areas of expertise. And should we, you know, should we view them as a full service agency that's going to do everything for us? Or should we actually just leverage what they're really good at and maybe find, you know, a couple of vendors, one that's really good at this, one that's really good at that. And that's a big conversation, obviously, as you know, in the agency world, even from a business model perspective of should you be full service? Should you focus on one aspect? And there's, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to that. It really depends upon what your goals are and what you're looking to do. But when it comes to misconceptions, I think that's, you know, that's one area. I think other misconceptions would be that that the agency world is glamorous, that we're all doing the Mad Men lifestyle and
that we're all laying on the beach with our laptops, because that's so practical, right? Because we can see our screens so in practical. The sun, like it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, no, I like to say, you know, well, I can only speak for our agency, but I view us more as that workhorse agency of not a lot of glamour going on. We're not making, you know, the splashy TV ads and whatnot, but we are driving sales, driving revenue for our clients, digging in, getting dirty in the data to figure out what has to happen, putting in those long hours to make it happen.
Yeah, I think another one, like on the flip side of it. So did you see recently how... It went viral on Twitter. And so I was reading all about this, but I guess, you know, the major Super Bowl commercial from Coinbase with the barcode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that was like one of the biggest, you know, Super Bowl commercials of this year, major, you know, talk about it and everything. Well, the CEO of Coinbase went on Twitter and wrote in a thread about how amazing that ad was, and how, you know, brilliant and hardworking his internal team was for creating that. Mm-hmm. And said that, you know, they're like, and then at the end capped it off with, I'm just so proud of our internal team because no marketing agency could have ever done this. Okay. Fast forward, like a day or two, and an agency owner tweets and comments on it and says, except that we pitched that to you in July of last year, John. It was in our slide deck, page 7, letter A or whatever. Like, she gave the receipts and like straight up gave them the whole deck, because this agency completely pitched them for their Super Bowl thing. They ended up not going with that agency, but stealing their idea, putting it into Super Bowl ads, and then crediting it to themselves, which is just like, oh, it like
completely
disgusting. And then the next step of that was, it turns out that another creative agency actually did come involved, do the creative, like created the actual barcode and the video spot. But what he was just talking about was, well, it was our idea and they implemented, you know, the other stuff. But like, then he had to go back and actually thank the creative one that did the barcode. Yeah. And just refused to acknowledge the first agency that said, hey, we gave you the idea. But like on the flip side of it, like I think a lot of agencies like don't get enough credit for like the hard work that they do and that they put in for a lot of these businesses. I think it's all too common that, you know, I guess it goes along with your misconception that, you know, agencies, it's like, so it's a glamorous job. Like, it's not very glamorous when you're not getting the credit for like literally the most popular Super Bowl commercial of the year. You know, you have a $5 billion company that's like stealing it from you. But I will say, like, one thing that I learned in terms of that misconception that you're talking about, the whole it's not glamorous thing, like, when I very first started, I totally envisioned myself like traveling the world with my laptop and just like being that like digital nomad. Like, I'm going to go live in Bali and I'm going to go like have this like beach life where I drink out of coconuts and still scale to multi six figures and just live my best life. And like, I think like after traveling a bit myself, like I learned that while some people may really enjoy that, like for me, it was just chaotic. Like, it was very hard to truly scale, so be viral, my agency in that state of constant go, right? Yeah, like yeah. It sounded cool. It sounded really fun, but like when it really comes down to it, like if you're going to get serious about your business and you really want to, you know, push those revenue goals and, you know, outperform yourself year over year, like you're pretty much not going to do that on a beach in Bali, or even like I even go so far now in the other direction where co-working, like that looked really cool to me. And like, there's some really cool co-working spots in my hometown or like here in Fort Lauderdale. And I even tried them out, but like, God, it was so distracting. Like yep. I would go in there and I'm like, oh, this is so cool. Like the unlimited coffee machines and like the hip people everywhere, just looking all like, it just was so cool. Like being in downtown, but at the same time, it was just like a facade almost, it's hard to like build and scale a real business, like sitting at like a public table and like meeting new people and like, I need to work. You know what I mean? So I think like that is just like on a bigger scale when you're talking about traveling the world, and it's a smaller scale when you're talking about, you know, trying to scale your business from, you know, a communal space and a co-working spot as well. Just things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think having stability in some aspects of your life is very important. You know, by nature, as you're scaling and growing a business, an agency, there's going to be a lot of instability that comes with that. So having some stability and okay, knowing where I'm going to wake up, or knowing, yeah, I'm not going to get distracted by 10 new people who walk through the door right now. I think there's a lot of value that comes from that.
100%. Okay. So in terms of hiring, do you think you should hire like experienced, trained team members from the start, or should you hire maybe some less experienced people that may come at a much better cost and then train them after you onboard them?
There's definitely pros and cons to both approaches, and we have tried both approaches here at Step Group over the years. What we've settled on, what we do at this point, is we hire people who have experience in the space and what we're hiring them to do, ideally already pre-existing agency experience, but at least in-house experience. And we've made that decision. There's a lot of reasons that go into that, but what we found when we hired people who didn't have that experience and trained them was, A, obviously you have to invest a ton of time and resources into that. And only some people are really a good fit for the industry that we work in. And it can be very hard to know which those people are when you start that training process. You've got to invest that time and energy into them before you're going to understand, oh yeah, they get it, they grasp it, yeah, they have a great ceiling, or you know what, this is just not the right fit. And so we found ourselves investing a lot of that work into people, and then you know, finding out some of the people are not going to be a good fit. And then also just dealing with that reality, going back to cash flow of when you bring on a new person and it takes them 3, 6 months, a year, whatever, to really get up to speed. Well, you're not getting much value out of them. They're actually taking value from them during the training process. And that's just eating away at your cash flow. Whereas if you pay, you know, more money, but for someone who can provide value day one, because they know what they're doing, that's a much more, you know, scalable approach, at least in our experience, for cash flow. So yeah, I think there's, you know, there's good arguments either way. I'm not going to say either way is bad, but we've settled on hire for experience.
Yeah, I've actually gone the exact same direction myself. Like, you bring up a really good point when you say that, you know, even if they are experienced, there's still training involved, right?
Oh, for sure.
There's still training involved for your agency and your specific process and everything. So whichever way you go, you're going to be training. Hopefully the more experienced one, it will be a lot less training, a lot less time, and a lot less expense put into that person. And in my opinion, you'll be able to see if they're going to sink or swim way faster when they come in experienced, right? When they come in inexperienced, you really want to give them, you know, a lot longer to sink or swim because they came in inexperienced and you're trying to build them up, right? And so if you get to the end of 2 or 3 months with the inexperienced person and they still sink, that was a long time to have somebody still sink and still have that need and not be able to fill that role. Whereas you bring in somebody with more experience, I think by the end of 1 month, you should really be able to see what they're able to do and if they're picking up things, if they're making processes better, if they're, you know, becoming autonomous, or if they're really, you know, reliant on, you know, other people within the agency and everything. So honestly, yeah, it does cost more money. I think, you know, hiring the more expensive one, but in the long run, it could cost even more money hiring the inexperienced person that ends up sinking anyway. So I totally agree with you there. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see agency owners making?
I would say, going back to what I mentioned or the misconception, definitely saying yes to too many things and damaging client relationships because you said, you know, yeah, we can do X that we can't really do. And when you fail at X, then everything that was going very well in the areas that you do understand in the Y and Z areas, that whole client relationship gets damaged because of that area. Again, it's a balance there. I mean, you have to look at, how big of a stretch are you saying yes to? Are you saying, oh, we do PPC? Yeah, we can do SEO. Or are you saying, oh, hey, we can add Pinterest because we already know TikTok, that kind of thing. There's certainly different, you know, levels of saying yes there. But I've seen that create a lot of problems for agencies and a lot of businesses who've come to us for help with PPC because they got burned by some other agency that said, yeah, yeah, we do PPC, we're great. And that's just not, you know, not what they did.
Yeah.
So I think that's one area. Definitely not getting money up front from clients like we talked about earlier is I think a big mistake a lot of agencies make and live to regret. Going back to your point too about kind of free work at the beginning of the relationship, it's important that you get paid out of the gate and make sure that the client is really, really invested in what's going on, has their own skin in the game, and they're not just looking for a free bill. They're not just gonna, you know, get annoyed because of some of the snags that are gonna come up during any onboarding process and move on and say, yeah, forget it. So I think those are some things. And then I think something every agency struggles with is that balance between getting work done for your existing clients, doing great by your existing clients, and then also making sure you have a good sales pipeline in place. Because if you are not constantly prepared to replace clients, you're going to lose even through no fault of your own. There's just always going to be retention realities that exist in the world. If you don't have new business coming on board to fill those places, well, you can wake up 6 months from now and say, I don't have money to pay my team because, you know, we've been so focused on our existing client base that we haven't got that sales pipeline in place. That can often take a while to get that new business coming in to support the team. So I think I would encourage, you know, any agency owners, CEOs that are looking at things is you've got to be focused on that sales pipeline and having the right team in place to keep that new business coming on board.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest things I was focused on. You know, in my own agency was when I very first started, like I started out as that like one man band trying to do everything, sales, lead gen, fulfillment, like you name it, I was doing it. And you really meet your cap quickly once you get your first few clients and your focus shifts from having all day to spend on lead gen to now, you know, having most of your day taken up with actual client work and client fulfillment. And what happens is you start forgetting about the pipeline. You start forgetting about those, you know, those important follow-ups that you should be doing with clients who may not have closed on the first few calls because you have those leads or those clients. And then, like you said, it can happen very quickly where, you know, for whatever reason, maybe a client, you know, drops you and you weren't actively working as hard as you were on the front end to bring in and replace those clients. And then now you have a cash flow issue really, you know, that can creep up on you really bad. I think another really big, you know, common mistake I see agency owners make, and this one I've seen, you know, from beginning agency owners all the way up to more, you know, bigger agencies, is setting really, really clear and firm expectations of what's going to happen in the first 3 months of the agency relationship. Yeah. And this has actually happened to me too. Like, you know, I think the first time I learned this lesson really hard was, you know, maybe like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when I lost like a really good client that we were getting stellar results for, purely because they didn't understand what stellar results was. And I did. And when they were complaining at the end there and sharing their frustrations, I was just completely baffled because they're complaining about like the best cost per lead like we've ever seen, right? They're complaining about like the best, you know, results that we're getting them by far. And we're trying to explain to them at the end that, hey, whoa, 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 you're getting insane results, right? But it was too late at that point because they had already had in their head a unattainable number, right? Yeah. And that true at the end of the day, it was our fault. That was our fault for really not setting what success looks like, when we expect to get there, how long is normal to get there. That's another one, like not even setting the right time frames up, right? Like there are people out there, a lot of them, and if you don't, businesses that haven't run ads before, that think they can just turn on ads and it's just going to rain money.
Right.
Like there's that no
magic
setup.
Magic button.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you're just going to turn on ads and then boom, like leads are just going to start falling from the sky, or sales are just going to start falling from the sky. And it doesn't work like that at all. There's setup time where the ads aren't even on. And then you have to get through testing. You're testing audiences, you're testing creative, you're testing copy, right? And so really letting them know like how long the setup time period is, how long the testing period is, and what we expect to achieve after we've found, you know, our winning target audiences, our winning creatives, you know, and then what scaling looks like from that point, right? And like really setting firm those timeframes and those actual like numbers that we hope to achieve. Without that, and I know it sounds simple, but I've seen so many, you know, agencies in the beginning stages, they just kind of gloss over that because they're so excited that the client is on board and they're looking forward to working with them and they're excited. But like, that is so crucial and important, because if that's not done, you can lose a good client that should be happy, but isn't. So in terms of, well, this actually is a really good transition, because I was just talking about a client who was unhappy with really great work. And while that was, you know, our fault at the time, like you're pulling your hair out going like, what a problem client this is, right? So in the event that you have a problem client, and all of us are going to have problem clients at some point, how do you handle the situation with a problem client?
I wish I could say I've never had to handle a problem client, but that is, that would be lying if I said that. Yeah. Part of the reality of, obviously, as you know, running an agency is every week it's okay. The fires, the problems are bubbling up. Let's, you know, talk with the team about how we handle this type of situation and resolve things. And I think a couple things I look for, first of all, is getting things in writing at the beginning of the relationship, getting an agreement in place that says, here's what we do. Here's what it looks like if you want to terminate the agreement. Here's when we charge you. Just laying it out is super important. Now, I can't make clients read that, and many seem to have forgotten having read that when they come to us down the road. But being able to say, hey, guys, you signed this. Here's what we have, you know, discussed, and being very clear about that is a very important, I think, A. B, realizing that the customer isn't always right is important with our team, especially you have, you know, some people come into things with this kind of customer service mindset of, okay, whatever the client says is right, we'll deal with it. And what we work on a lot with our team members is, you know, the client is hiring us to be the expert for them and to help them see success. And if they're trying to have us do something that's going to hinder our ability to make them successful, we have to push back on that. We have to explain, hey, here's what, you know, what you're actually asking of us. Here's why that's a problem. Because, you know, if we run a campaign for them that doesn't work because it wasn't set up to work well from the start, and we knew that, we're still going to get blamed by the client. So we have to have crystal clear expectations going into that and push back on clients when they're trying to make us do things that are going to not be in their best interest. And then I think when it comes to communication with clients, being transparent, certainly being strategic in communication, but hey, if we messed up, don't try and hide that. Don't try and play the blame game. Say, hey, I'm sorry. You know, we messed up. We're going to make it right. Here's how. And then at the same time, if the client bears some of that responsibility, making sure they're aware of that and making sure that there's a conversation going on both sides where, hey, we messed up here, but here, you know, no, this is what you told us to do. We did it. Let's make sure we're sharing responsibility.
Yeah. Exactly. That one like frustrates me more than anything with problem clients is the client that hires you and your agency as the expert and then tries to tell you what to do, like, and then tries to manage the process and manage, you know, the like what you're doing, but at the same time, like, they failed at doing it themselves, and then now they're trying to hire experts and tell them how to do it. It's super backwards, and you're spot on when you say that you do have to push back on that, because ultimately, you know, it's tempting to just, you know, do what they say, but if you know that what they're saying is not going to convert and it's not going to do well, you're just going to be in a bad spot at the end of that. Right. And
100%. You
know, I've been in situations where like we have been told by the client to do something that we know is not, like, for example, you know, we often build funnels and run traffic to those funnels for the client. And we'll have a client that created a VSL that they wanted to put on their funnel. The VSL was terrible. Like, it was bad. It was really, really bad. Like, yeah. Fiverr at $5 bad, not yeah. even like the $25 Fiverr, like the $5. And we're like, look, the, really don't feel this is going to do anything for the conversions of the funnel. But they were like out of it. Like, and they came back and they said, no, I asked five other people and they said it was really great. So we want it on. Okay. So we were kind of forced. Like, we were just like, oh, at that point we say, okay, well, we're the creative agency and we really truly don't believe it will. We will put it on for you because you are the client, but if it doesn't convert well, we just want it to be known that we seated here at this point that we didn't think that was going to happen. And if that yeah. does happen, we'll take it off for you and revert back to what we're doing. So it's kind of like sometimes they will just completely strong arm you into it, and at that point, like, you are providing a service, you have to do it. But it's just about really making it clear that, look, when this tanks, wink wink, we know it's going to tank. We're going to revert back to that. Is that okay even? And though, and then usually, yeah, that's just, we've had success with in that path before. Cause then at least they know, okay, it was the thing that I did. Right.
100%. And sometimes too, I mean, I think being prepared to stop working with a client, if you realize they're not going to be the right fit for you, is important as well. And making sure your team knows that is an option, that they're not just stuck, that if they're coming to you, you know, I've had team members come to me and say, hey, this client is micromanaging everything that I do. They want to talk to me constantly. You know, they're blaming us for bad results, but they won't let me do what I'm saying we need to do. Then I'll say, okay, let's have a conversation with this client and say, you guys hired us to be the experts. We need to do what we believe is going to be right for you. If you're not comfortable with that, no worries. Totally understand. We're not going to be a great fit for each other. Let's part ways amicably. No worries. Yeah. But if we're going to keep working together, you have to trust us and let us do our thing. And sometimes you just have to have that conversation.
Totally. And like, you know, at this stage in the game, like, I couldn't agree with you more. Where that was a much harder pill to swallow was in the beginning when, yes. like, you know, you're dealing with only like a handful of clients, and that one client walking away is like 30% of your revenue, right? Or more in some cases when you're early on. And so I think that, you know, beginner agency owners run into that a lot more so than bigger ones, because a bigger one, you know, if one client drops off, then it wasn't a good fit, right? It's better for everybody. But for them, it can be a huge chunk of their revenues. But I think that it, even at that stage, when it is a big chunk of your revenue, like, having that self-respect that you're going to, you know, have that line of, you're not going to be treated poorly by your clients, because there are clients out there that will just abuse their agency, like, yep. like speak nasty to them, you know, vulgar language, order them around. And like, I've seen it all. And you have to be willing to just like terminate the relationship if it's, you know, becoming really unhealthy and toxic. Right. And I think yeah. you really hear that as the beginners, because they're the ones who are really, really get roped into those terrible situations and feel chained to them.
What happens often too, I mean, even in that, you know, for those beginners, is when you have that conversation with the client, many times they'll actually respect that, and they're maybe not used to people standing up to them, but they'll, you know, they're people, and often they don't even realize what they're doing sometimes. They're like, oh, I didn't realize it was coming across this way. And half the time it ends up with us being saying, hey, we're not a good fit. And they're kind of contrite and saying, no, please keep working with us, we'll be better. And you know, sometimes, you know, we've salvaged many relationships that way, and it turns into a great thing because you've had that clear, honest communication together and kind of worked through that challenge.
You're so right. And again, it's those beginners that really need to like find that backbone and that courage to stand up for themselves, because look, what can happen in many cases, they can save the relationship, not lose the client, and then have a better, healthier relationship with their client moving forward. Right. That doesn't always equal that they part ways. Yeah. In terms of agency lead gen, always a huge topic, in the industry. How do you find clients?
Yeah, well, a variety of ways. We do our own advertising campaigns. Let's just say we eat our own dog food. So we do our own Google ads and all that good stuff. We have relationships with other partners, other agencies who will refer business to us, as well as of course word of mouth referral from existing clients. We do some outbound lead generation. We do PR, podcasts. Try to really have our hands in a number of different areas so that A, we're reaching the audience that we want to reach, but also B, going back to that credibility side of things that we talked about earlier, when you do have an active lead you're talking about and they go and research you and they see, oh, hey, they know what they're talking about. They're a premier Google partner. They've got content out in this place and that place. They've got a good, online presence that's very helpful in then closing that deal. And so it can be hard. ROI on blog posts, for example, that's very hard to calculate because you're not going to get many leads from people, clicking a button in a blog post. But we try and look at the bigger picture side of things and say, okay, every piece plays a role in getting our name out there, attracting a lead to speak with us, and then ultimately giving enough confidence to that lead in our expertise to be able to close that deal and start working together.
Yeah. Ours is the same approach, right? So like it goes back to kind of about what we were talking earlier about with the engagement stuff is like there's engagement and there's conversions. And so we run, conversion campaigns for our own agency to book in clients. We also do, like other outreach methods like LinkedIn outreach and things like that, which are just like, heavy conversion driven and that have data behind them to know, how much effort or time or money was spent here to result in X amount of clients. And then there's like the supporting activities, right? So like the podcast, the blog post, the social media posting and all of that kind of stuff that in my opinion, it's not, we don't do those things directly to create, conversions of clients, but what they do assist the conversion activities. Cause people today, they go through, the funnel, the sales call. And after that first sales call, when they have to talk to their wife or they have to do whatever they have to do before they make the decision to move forward, they do their research, right. Like they go online and they see who the heck is this guy, who the heck is this agency? They hop over on Trustpilot, they check out the Better Business Bureau. They want to feel good about moving forward with you. And if you didn't do all these other like engagement style activities, right? Like work on your reviews for those types of pages, work on, having content out there. Like if people Google my name, they're going to find the podcast. They're going to find, our website. They're going to find those blog articles. They're going to find interviews that I've done. They're going to find all that stuff. And they're going to hopefully feel better about who they're moving forward with. Whereas if you just do the conversion stuff, right? Like in the outreach stuff, and you have nothing on this side to build your credibility, then you're going to convert less. Like those conversion activities are going to produce less because that trust isn't being built in that in between call number one and call number two from what
Absolutely.
We see. Yeah. Okay. This last question is something that I ask everybody that comes on the show because we have a lot of agency owners that are in the newer stages of their agency as well that listen to the show. So what would be your biggest piece of advice for a brand new agency owner that is just starting out?
Let's see. I want to give a bigger piece of advice and then a very, very tactical takeaway piece of advice. Bigger piece of advice would be cash flow is king. Like we talked about in this conversation, think about how you are structuring your business to make cash flow always be positive and be aware that what you're selling, essentially, you're selling people, you're selling people's time. We're in a service-based industry and what clients are hiring from us is the expertise our team brings to play. That can be very expensive because if you have to hire those people to provide those services, well, your hard costs are going up very quickly. Make sure that you have things in place to get the cash coming in to actually pay you for that. Or again, so many agencies fail because they don't figure out that balance. And then from a very tactical standpoint, kind of a takeaway from this conversation, I would say track your time. Use a simple, we use Harvest here at Stub Group. There's lots of easy time tracking things to use out there, but figure out the categories where you spend your time and break it down to specific clients you're spending that time on, sales, marketing, just different categories of where you allocate your time, and then regularly assess that. And you're going to realize, oh, wait, this client, they're taking, 70% of my time and they're just not worth it. I can go find three clients to replace them by taking that time and putting it into sales and getting better clients. Or you could see, oh, hey, I'm not spending any time on sales this month because I was dealing with these fires. That's a problem. I really need to spend more time there. And that's been something that's been very helpful to me personally and to us as an agency.
That's huge. I think those are two really, really good tips, especially the time one, because like I said before, it's really easy to start slipping into fulfillment and letting sales fall behind, or, you know, letting lead gen fall behind, you know, or you could slip in the other direction and like start neglecting your own clients even, which would be a whole other problem. So super, super great advice. John, thank you again so much for being on the show with us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Tyler.
That's going to be it for today's episode. If you're ready to take your agency to the next level and have your leads, your team, and your sales all done for you, then apply now at dfyagencyprogram.com/scale. That's dfyagencyprogram.com/scale. There will be a clickable link in the podcast show notes below. See you in the next episode of the Digital Marketing Agency Builders Podcast.